Blog Talk Radio.
This is Ralph Pointer, What's Happening? And tonight is Tuesday, October 25th, 2016. And we are continuing part two of our discussion of this farce they call a presidential election. And one of our theories this evening is that this country is becoming ungovernable. And that in addition to becoming ungovernable, such government as it is a government by murder. That the world we live in, economic, social, political, is based on military victories or defeats. We, people of color, lost wars, but the results are not forever, as nothing is forever. When we do not demand political payment for our political labor, we are political slaves. Comment by Ralph Pointer, and without further ado, we will introduce one of our hosts for this evening, but not before we give a shout-out to Brother Larry Pinckney and Sister Lynn Stewart, both former political prisoners. Brother Ralph in the house.
Thank you so much for that. The overriding element in every situation or circumstance in a black life is racism. Birth, elementary school, housing, health, food, etc. Black lives have never mattered except during slavery and other circumstances where money is being made by our labors for others. The modern death penalty, 80% black, move lynching indoors. The police, as the army of occupation, have taken lynching outside again. The lynch mob is the racist system, including the courts and the media. And because the lives of our heroes and sheroes who once protected us in our community do not matter to us, the people, our political prisoners are now dying in captivity. They are tortured and isolated. Only armed struggle can recreate our image in our own minds as well as the minds of others. Wake up. Now is the time. Now, the beginning of this state, this program, brothers and sisters, is the world we live in, economic, social, and political, is based on military victories or defeats. We people of color lost wars, but the results are not forever, as nothing is forever. I do not think that has to be explained. And anyone who has not understood this is someone who has not recognized the reality of history. We are here not as an accident. We are in our circumstances because someone, some people, some organization has decided this is where we must be. And as Queen Mother Moore always said to me over and over, Ralph, you must remember, the job of the oppressors is to oppress. The job of the oppressed is to fight oppression. And so, what oppressions are we facing today and every day? And one of the things that I like to say that we are a program basically designed to make people aware of how we got here and those who opposed our getting here, those who fought on our sides in these wars, our political prisoners who are in jail. We must free them if we are ever to think that we ourselves are to be freed. And with that said, what situation are we in today? We are in an America where, as I say, we are sheep. And the American sheep are being, what is the word for it? The American sheep are being corralled into two large pens, herded into large pens, both equally destructive to all people in and out of America, except of the corporate elites and those beneficiaries of the corporate elite. And then there's a ladder of oppression. And if you start at the top, we have the corporate elites, and as you go down this ladder of oppression, they call those, and I do not call myself, the middle class. We have the very rich, the middle class. It's divided into six different classes by sociologists. It could be divided much further, but we know who's at the bottom. Black women are at the bottom because they sometimes are victimized by the next ladder of oppression sinking deeper into the mud. Below the mud are black men. And then you can discuss how it goes right up the ladder. And one of the things we must recognize in this day of voting, and I had a discussion with my dear sister Lynn Stewart today, and I said, this is where people are. They are involved in voting. And so in order to discuss anything with them, we too must be involved in voting, but we must never forget what was said by our brilliant sister, who once said that if voting could change anything, then it would be outlawed. Emma Goldman. And so we all know what the real deal is, and I will remind people that many years ago, Queen Mother Moore said to me, Ralph, if you want to work with people and change their minds, you must become religious. And she had a charter for the oldest Christian church, the Ethiopian Christian Coptic Church. And she took me to a church that she had rented or leased, and she showed me the robes, and it looked much like, I think, that we understand or we are more familiar with the Greek Christian church, with the and you know the way the ministers dressed, and she had all the accoutrements, and she says, you must become a Christian because this is where your people are. And I couldn't do it because it would require me to lie to people about what I believed, and I could not lie to people in that fashion. And so we are reduced to involving ourselves in the electoral process, knowing exactly what it is and what it isn't, but we must be involved in the education of people. Now, weeks ago or months ago, I said America was quickly becoming ungovernable, and we see today in Utah, at first it was the Hillary story or the Trump story, and now we have a third person in Utah. And Hillary and Trump were running neck and neck. And suddenly in Utah, we get a third-party candidate who just happened to have once been an employee of the CIA. And so we see the results in Utah are 33% Hillary, 33% this new ex-CIA candidate, and 33% Trump. Ungovernable, and it's going to get worse. And so I've been told, wind this up. There are so many things that we want to talk about this evening, but I'm going to take a shortcut and pass the phone right back to Sister Betty.
Thank you, Brother Ralph. And as I said, before we go to Brother Larry Pinckney, I want to remind people that we live in a country governed by death camps and a government that rules by murder. And if you are a receiver of prisoner news, you would have heard that there's a nationwide epidemic of suicide in solitary. And the caption reads, solitary confinement is murder. And this comes from the Free Alabama movement. And they're talking about the number of mentally ill in prison who are committing suicides. And then if you scroll down in this particular event, it talks about the suicides that are out of control at the largest prison in Texas. And the people of the death camps in this country have had one of the largest general strikes in the history of this country. And do you see it? Do you hear about it from what is called the media? No, you do not. And that's another example of what we mean when we say government by murder. I want to later on remind people that we don't have to stand for this. We have an alternative. And one of our alternatives is to say we don't have a dog in this fight. And in November 5th and 6th, we're going to be in Washington, D.C. for a Black People's Convention with our demands, telling both parties, we don't have a dog in this fight. Brother Ralph?
Yes, and along with that statement, we must remember that we cannot continue to practice slavery. And what do I mean by that? I mean, if we do political work and we do not get political reward, then we are practicing political slavery. No matter how you count it, this is what people of color are doing when they go out in mass to support Hillary Clinton. Political slavery, because we don't have time to go over her record this evening. But at home and abroad, she is the enemy of the people. That does not mean that we support Donald Trump. What that means is we don't have a dog in this fight. We're going to Washington with 21 demands, and I will be presenting the demand to free our political prisoners, all of our political prisoners. And without further ado, I'm going to pass this back to our brother out in Minneapolis, Brother Larry Pinckney. Are you with us?
Yes, of course I'm with you. Go ahead. Go ahead, sister.
Good evening, Sister Lamb, and to Brother Syracuse. Welcome to joining the usual suspects. Pardon me, Brother Larry. Go ahead.
Absolutely no problem, my sister. Greetings to all of my sisters and brothers. Greetings to you all. Power to the people. The struggle not only continues, but it intensifies. We must free our political prisoners in order to free ourselves. Brother Ralph mentioned, he talked about the job of the oppressed. Let me say that the job of the oppressed, be we black, white, brown, red, or yellow, the job of the oppressed is to throw off oppression. I repeat, the job of the oppressed is to throw off oppression. We must become or regain our humanity. We are slaves. I repeat, we are slaves, all of us. We must regain our humanity. We must do this for the sake not only of this nation, but just as importantly, for the sake of Mother Earth, for this entire globe. Let me say that, as Brother Ralph was talking about the American sheep, let me say that the American sheep are being herded to the slaughter. The slaughter, I repeat, slaughter, all right? We must understand what this systemic game is all about. We cannot continue to practice our own genocide. You know, we are the ones practicing and facilitating our own political, social, and economic genocide. We cannot continue to practice our own genocide. So I'm not going to take up a lot of time. I know that there are other people. I want to express, as always, my greetings to Sister Professor Betty Davis, to our dear beloved Sister Lynn Stewart, to our stalwart brother Ralph Poynter, to, of course, Ann Lamb, who I always look forward to hearing from with her incredible reports about our political prisoners, to Tom, to everyone on this program, to Tom Syracuse, to Joel, to all of our brothers and sisters. All power to the people. Please remember, the job of the oppressed is to throw off oppression. And this is what this struggle is all about. Here we are in the 21st century. This is what this struggle is all about. Thank you so much. All power to the people. Free our political prisoners. Free ourselves. All power to the people. Thank you so very much.
And thank you for that, Larry. And a brief interlude here. When asking white people if they are aware that American foreign policy is the root of much poverty in the world, their action or reaction suggests that they do not know or care. When asking black people if they are aware that political prisoners are responsible for the few gains that have been made, the answer is the same. They do not know, and they do not seem to care. And so with that said, I'm going to pass the microphone back to Sister Betty.
I know Sister Ann is in the house, but I think we're going to ask Sister Lynn if she wants to chime in at this point. our former political prisoner, the community of people who are righteous brought her home, and she is the people's lawyer, the people's lawyer, Larry Davis's lawyer, political prisoner's lawyer, Lynn Stewart in the house.
In the house, in the house, and ready to roll. You know, the Black Panther Party is celebrating, as best it can, the 50th anniversary of the founding out in Oakland. And there, of course, are many positives that the Panthers bring to us, their breakfast programs, their education, their health, and mostly, I think, for many of us and for that era, the image of Black men carrying guns. That was what they gave. That is their legacy. There were negatives. They did not join in local actions that were fighting the police and doing things, but that is forgiven after 50 years. And there they are out in Oakland, I hope in attendance, Bobby Seale, Mark Cook, Sekou Odinga, Bilal Sunni Ali, Marshall Eddie Conway. But we have to remember the ones, the Black Panthers, who are not there. And they're not there because they're in the death camps. And they are many. We know about, of course, Mumia, first and foremost. Matulu, Veronica Bowers, Jaleel Montakim, Seth Hayes, Anthony Bottom, Ed Poindexter, all of these, and it's but a smattering of the names I could quote. But the names are not meaningful. It is what we must do locally, if you're in a state where there are people in prison, and at point in the federal system, and I do understand that Danny Glover is about to carry a letter to the weak-kneed Obama demanding that Leonard Peltier, Veronica Bowers be released because they are prime on our list. However, I want to inspire tonight also by reading a poem from Mondo Huelanga, who died in a Nebraska prison. He, too, was a Panther. He, too, was swept up by the COINTELPRO of J. Edgar Hoover, an insidious program designed to kill the militant, the gun-carrying part of our movement. And, of course, I also dedicate this reading of this poem to my personal friend and my political friend, Abdul-Majid, who died this year in prison also. The name of this poem is Dressed in Black. Yeah, we had guns but wasn't tripping, wasn't stuck in no death groove with visions of blood dripping and bullet wound fatalities stacking up like the modern-day echoes of the nigger word erupting from contorted mouths of Africans lost, left to find themselves by themselves on city streets by communities of us that traded in Black power for government jobs and mid-level management window dressing positions under glass ceilings with buckets and squeegees in hand. As some of us search, not no mountains, but suburban tracks for our promised land. We had guns, but wasn't trippin'. Picked up them pieces, cause justice was locked in a box and was screamin' by politicians and cops who held the keys and was schemin' to muzzle the screamin' sound with deception or outright force that didn't work as gangs dressed in blue, but they weren't no Crips but cops on the beat with guns on their hips. Hunted for Bloods, who was not dressed in red, except we bled all the same from the lead and the dead that we carried to be dropped in the dirt. Got too heavy in time for us to stay scared and be resting in peace like corpses in earth, while the everyday hurt of our people in pain throbbed like an ache in the knees you be feeling from too much time kneeling in prayer to a god who resembles the cops and the mayor of the city, and big shots on school boards who was feeding our children with food for their heads that was making them sick, and landlords who was greedy, and part of all this was collecting the rent from the slums where we fought with roaches and rats and ceilings that leaked when it rained into buckets arranged on the floor, filling with water till they couldn't hold more, so we could stand still after getting our fill of abuse that our people was facing. We had guns, but wasn't tripping. Wasn't throwing no sign but the black power fist. We flashed in salute to our sisters and brothers who had nothing to fear from us being strapped. Didn't have to sweat getting capped, because we wasn't out to collect no stripes by reliving the hype of some thug life we learned watching mafia dons on TV taking turns using thugs to spill blood for cold cash. We had guns, but wasn't getting down like that. We had guns, but wasn't tripping. Police was thinking death and whipping was set in stone as a one-way deal. And how else they supposed to feel when they could get down wrong and get away clean, doing dirt for the political machine, prowling our streets under its direction, enforcing unwritten rules of oppression on our people who were needing defense and protection and relief from attacks that came so frequent and hard, some of us had to put our lives on the line and stand guard. And we thank all the Black Panthers, past and present, for standing guard. And we, too, stand guard, and we'll bring you home. That is our promise. Thank you, Ralph.
Thank you so much for that, Lynn. We look forward to hearing those words of wisdom and of Mongo Waylanga, who died in the death camps of this society, are gone unnoticed by most people of color, most people who his actions supported. And so, without further ado, this is a program to support our political prisoners and to wish our brothers and sisters with the same idea in mind, whatever field they are in. The good brother, Danny Glover, is going to Washington hoping to free Leonard and a few of our other political prisoners. It can
Ralph,
be done.
This is Lynn, Ralph. Did I get cut off? Was I not on?
No, you didn't get cut off.
Okay. Well,
I don't know why you...
I ended up being cut off, but good. I'm happy. Good, good, good.
Oh, the poem was great.
Good. It is great. I could read it every night. Sometimes
yeah,
I do.
It's wonderful.
Thanks. Good, good. Thanks. Okay, bye.
Okay, it dropped for a minute. Technical difficulties, but it came back. You dropped. Your voice went down, but we heard you loud and clear. And so, without further ado, we're going to call on Sister Ann to give us a report on our political prisoners. Ann Lamb, are you there?
I am in the house. I'm happy to be in such wonderful company. I literally just got off the phone with Jaleel. So he sends his greetings to everybody. He's having this ongoing thing, you know, going on with his First Amendment rights and the mail getting dicked around with and all kinds of stuff. I finally got his report on the disciplinary hearing and his blog on Colin Kaepernick from Leslie up in Buffalo, right? So this is interesting that some people receive his mail and some people don't. So this was something he had written all the way on October 7th explaining the whole situation. So people go to freejaleel.com. It's there. The whole thing is there. You can read it. It's very interesting and very good. And also the blog about Colin Kaepernick is quite excellent as well. So if you go onto his website, you click on the blogs, you can go down and read a bunch of them. He's a really prolific and wonderful writer. So he was telling me today that in addition to, like, quote-unquote political mail not going through, even personal mail. He wrote a letter to his daughter. She never got it. He sent a card to his grandson. He never got it. He sent a card to his great-granddaughter. She never got it. So this is like going beyond saying it's just because you're talking politics. You know, this is like really bad that, you know, here's his family now getting affected by this. And, you know, this is unconscionable. So I would advise people that it would be a good idea to call Anucci. He is the commissioner, right? And voice our protest about this issue. I'm going to be talking to the Center for Constitutional Rights about this as well. But if you go to freejaleel.com, you should see somewhere that we are supposed to be calling. I'm making sure it's here. If not, I'll make sure it is here. Yeah, call the acting commissioner. And there's his number. And write. So people could call Anthony J. Anucci, the New York State Department of Corrections. I call it the New York State Department of Corruptions. 518-457-8134. That would be very helpful. And I also encourage everybody, as I've been saying all along, write to Jaleel. Let's flood that mailroom with any kind of letters, cards, anything. Even if you just drop him a line, heard you're having trouble. I just sent him something by certified mail because I did an affidavit, you know, saying, a notarized affidavit saying I did not receive this, that, and the other thing, right, for a legal thing. And I sent that by certified mail to Anucci. He got it. And I sent it by certified mail to Attica, where it was received yesterday and signed for by a CO yesterday. Howsomever, according to the directive that governs mail, if you send certified mail to a prisoner, the prisoner is supposed to sign for it in front of the CO, not the CO. So they're already violating their own directives. So we're going to start, you know, keeping a record of that. And in addition to that, tomorrow, if people can do this tomorrow, go to jerichony.org, scroll down the left side, you'll see that there's an urgent medical campaign for Robert Sethes. Robert Sethes is once again going through this horrible stuff with his sugars, that they're either way too low, like in the 30s and 40s, which is mad low, or way too high. So his sugars were low again on Thursday. So they decided, okay, well, cut back your insulin a little bit. So they did that. And then on Saturday morning, his sugars was 600, right? Mm. So this is extremely urgent. He has finally seen the endocrinologist, and it is up on the website. You go to jerichony.org and scroll down the left side. You'll see urgent medical campaign for Robert Sethes. We'd encourage everybody to do this tomorrow if possible. You're going to phone, write, and fax to call Jay Konigsman, who is the Deputy Commissioner and Chief Medical Officer. And his phone and his fax and everything are up there. And, you know, this is really important because he did finally see an endocrinologist, which was something that kept getting postponed. And the endocrinologist has recommended that he get an insulin pump and monitor. Now, that would be one way that he would be able to somewhat control his own sugars. So, since, you know, we're fighting this bureaucratic slow-turning wheel, so we're trying to push it forward. You know, the man has not been well for a long time. Of course, they turned him down at the parole board for the 10th time, basically based on nature of the crime. You know, if you read the transcript, which is also up on jerichony.org, 33 pages of transcript, and almost 20 of them are the instant nature of the crime. And also Black Lives Matter, like, wouldn't that affect Seth? Wouldn't he still be angry, you know, and all this stuff. You know, the man is a model prisoner. In addition to that, he has all these health problems. He has congestive heart failure. He has diabetes. He has high blood pressure. You know, couldn't you just be human and let somebody go home? You know, it's really
well,
disgusting.
And
well, we know why they wouldn't, you know, but, you know, I would encourage people to make the call. Go ahead. Sorry.
Would like to interrupt you at that point. Couldn't they just be human?
No, they can't. We know that.
They are death camps.
I'd like
to reinforce what you said about writing. I cannot emphasize
how important it is that we let the prisoner and the prison know that we have not forgotten our brothers and sisters. And they not only, it's not only mail, it's breaking down of your spirit, both of the prisoner and those of us who support political prisoners. And I can't tell you how it helped Lynn when she reported to me that when she got to prison, when she first got to Carswell, they would make mail call, and she was on the third floor, and they would call the mail. And the day they got to 100, the whole prison cheered. Everyone was happy. Not only they didn't know who Lynn was, but they knew she got a lot of mail. That lifted up their spirits. And we have to, we're running down the path of public support of Hillary Clinton, and we don't have time to flood the prisons with letters. We must do that. That is very simple. It changes the life of the prisoner forever when we do this. And I'm going to pass it on to Betty and let her continue with the program.
100%.
Don't worry, Ann. We want to hear more from you.
Okay, we're going to call on Brother Tom soon, but I just want to make an announcement. On Friday, coming up, October 28th, at the 1199 SEIU United Health Workers at 310 West 43rd in Manhattan, New York City, there will be a Friends of Haiti Diaspora Town Hall meeting, and I'm sure they're going to be passing the hat for Haitian relief. Once again, Friday, October 28th, 2016. It's from 6 p.m. to 9 p.m., and it's at the 1199 SEIU Union Hall, 310 West 43rd Street. I believe that's near 8th Avenue.
Yes.
Also, I want to remind people that the Clintons are responsible for a lot of the mass slavery that we see. They call it the effective death penalty. Let's not forget that. And the Rockefellers, who I think were Republicans, were responsible for the Rockefeller laws in terms of treating crack cocaine differently from regular cocaine. So let's not forget
that. Say nothing of Attica.
Say nothing of Attica, right?
Well, I want to, at this point, ask Brother Tom, we're going to open up his mic, and we're going to ask Brother Joel to be ready to step in there as well. Brother Tom, are you ready? And we want to acknowledge Brother John Mubarak.
I hope that you can hear me because the battery on my phone is low.
That's okay. We hear you loud and clear. We want to acknowledge that John Mubarak and Jill Stein visited Reverend Pinckney as a follow-up on his request and special letter to the Green Party to assist him. Okay,
well,
Brother Tom.
I'm very glad to hear that. And, you know, the big challenge for those in the progressive movement is to re-educate the American public as to the history of the American Republic. And I've been reading Professor Gerald Horne's book, The Counter-Revolution of 1776, and I'd like to read a few excerpts from that. Quote, "The descendants of enslaved Africans continue to suffer astronomical rates of incarceration, are disproportionately accorded the death penalty, and endure all manner of ills, with few scrutinizing the origins of this republic in search of a reason why. As I write, the ills just noted, which can fairly be seen as part of the legacy of slavery and Jim Crow, continue to be worked out in the most advanced capitalist nation where I happen to reside. These ills, which continue to afflict the descendants of enslaved Africans in North America, and the reasons why, which stretch back to the Republic's founding, are an issue that should animate study of and activism within what is now the United States as the 21st century unwinds. The successful 1776 revolt against British rule in North America has been hailed almost universally as a great step forward for humanity. But the Africans then residing in the colonies overwhelmingly sided with the British. The so-called Revolutionary War was in large part a counter-revolution, a conservative movement that the Founding Fathers fought in order to preserve their liberty to enslave others, and which today takes the form of a racialized conservatism and a persistent racism targeting the descendants of the enslaved. Some people might ask, well, why would the African slaves take the side of the British? Well, they knew that the British were having tremendous problems controlling the slave populations of their most lucrative colonies in the Caribbean. Not only the British, but the Dutch and the French and the Spaniards. That's where the money was being made, and yet how could they maintain such a system of slavery in small islands in which 90 or 95% of the population were black slaves, and then the rest were white slave owners and their managers? Well, it was unsustainable. The British government knew this and was thinking about how to transform these colonies from out-and-out slavery to something more palatable, less exploitative, which eventually evolved into wage slavery. This, the slave owners here in North America, mainland, could not accept. They were convinced that since the slave population here on the mainland did not consist of such an overwhelming number of blacks, that they could keep things under control and make their profits throughout and out slavery. And so we have this myth that this country was founded as a democracy, as that this revolution was a progressive revolution, when the opposite was the reality. And this is the kind of history that we must understand and accept if we are to ever stop being vulnerable to the phony political system that we have now, to having to choose, we think, between the lesser of the two evils, between an egotistical racist on the one hand and a war-mongering imperialist liar on the other hand. And yet people are falling for it because they do not understand their history, the history of this republic.
Thank you so much for that, Tom. It is know your history, because if you don't know your history, they say you will repeat history. I say different. If you don't know your history, it will cause your death. Now, when the British promised freedom for those who supported the British, they lied. And when the Americans promised democracy for those who supported America, they lied. Much similar to what is happening today. Hillary says certain things, she lies. Trump says other things, he lies. We should not allow ourselves to be caught in the middle. We must have our own demands. And talk about history repeating itself. Our dear sister Mary Neal, who was on the program regularly talking about saving the lives of mentally ill people, We had another deathly ill person, and we all know the story. I will not repeat it. Lynn had reminded me back in the 80s when a New York grandmother who was killed by the police, and the story didn't come out as to what happened, but Jimmy Breslin was in the car, and Lynn, Bill Kunstler, and Jimmy Breslin were having this discussion about how could a grandmother like that. I interrupted
Eleanor
the conversation.
Eleanor Bumpers was the name, Ralph. Eleanor Bumpers.
Right.
Was her name. And I said, because the police did not see her as their grandmother. And it continues. And Jimmy Breslin added something that I will never forget. He was allowed to go to the scene. And he said it was all a lie, because what he had done was he found the hand that supposedly held the knife, a finger that was blown off by the first shot from the shotgun, and it was still on the floor of the apartment building. And his question was, how could an elderly woman, overweight, with her fingers blown off, her hand blown off, hold a knife in that hand? Impossible. They killed her intentionally. Mary Neal was telling us about that every opportunity she got. And poor Mary is gone. And no, we are the poorer for her, you know, her demise. And Joel, are you there?
Yes,
are you
can
there?
Can you hear me? Yes, hello. Can
hear
you hear me?
Yes,
okay,
we can hear you.
I was listening to Tom's description of Gerald Horn's book, The Counter-Revolution of 1776, and I think it is very important that people be unbrainwashed. You know, it's not that just that people fall for this and have their loyalty to the United States, such as it is, created around a shell of lies, but also that whole idea that the United States somehow is the quintessential democracy means that they can go all over the world to impose corporate domination on everybody else in the name of democracy, when democracy is supposed to mean the power of the people. Of course, they say it in Greek, they don't say it in English, right? The power of the people. And it's not just the power of the people in general, but in this stage of development, it includes self-determination. And you have one country after another being taken over by the CIA, and all in the name of democracy, they're going into all of those countries to impose human rights on the points of their bayonets. And I wanted to take some issue. I don't think it's that it's only because on the part of the American people they're ignorant of their history in terms of racism and imperialism, because from the perspective of the privileged white person, their privileges are materially based on other people being super oppressed in the United States and around the world. And there's a dim awareness, unfortunately, among a lot of this population that they benefit from imperialism as long as somebody else is the main target and as long as they're given some of these benefits. So it's a very difficult knot to untie, but there is that contradiction. Some people have a an oversimplified view, and they look at it like just from an international class perspective without seeing that wrinkle, that you have so much pro-imperialist energy still imparted among the regular American people who feel themselves benefiting from imperialism. and essentially selling their souls as human beings for these dubious benefits, material benefits. But one other thing I wanted to say also is that I don't know if it's, I haven't read Gerald Horn's book, but I heard about a legal case that embodied what a lot of the rebellion against the British was all about, especially on the part of what was known as the Virginia Dynasty. And that case, I think it was called the Somerset case. And Somerset was the name of a slave who had been transported to England on some business trip by the slave master and escaped from slavery in England. And I believe he was recaptured, but a group of abolitionists made a court case out of it. And they brought it before a court and a judge whose name I believe was McMahon. And McMahon ruled that British law, while it recognized slavery, did not give the slave owners the power to recapture an escaped slave. Once he had escaped, the law did not apply in that way. And when the news got back to the Americas, a lot of the Virginia Dynasty said, well, that precedent would lead to the abolition of slavery. And therefore, it was a big resolve within the Virginia Dynasty to join up on an opportunistic basis with the more idealistic types that were calling for a revolution based on the abolition of monarchy and a democratic republic. So that was a direct expression of what the rebellion was all about. It could not have taken place and would not have taken place unless the slave owners felt that they felt that the British ultimately were not necessarily in their corner as time would go on, and that some of these rulings, also some of their restrictions of the slave trade, were also resented by and defied by the pro-slavery elements in the United States. And it continued for a long time. Even a lot of the people that are supposed to be the more democratic side, the Jeffersonians, for example, a lot of them also, especially after they became terrified by the fact that there was a successful revolution in Haiti, they became terrified that, wow, what could happen if these enslaved people became free? What might happen to us, the elite, exploiters and oppressors? So all the way through, a lot of the even the seemingly democratic pleadings, which can be used for some of the principles that they appeal to, a lot of it was done in a corrupt way because they feared also that a strong federal government could develop a conflict with the slaveocracy, and they wanted to keep the federal government very weak so that they would be able to perpetuate slavery, and it's a contradiction. In other words, they felt that their rights, as called states' rights sometimes, even to this day, were that they had a right to maintain slavery. And if somebody told them that they could not do this, why, that was tyranny. So it's like in George Orwell's book, where, as a parody, the government had the three slogans, that war is peace, freedom is slavery, and ignorance is strength. It all it ties up together. So I think it's a very valuable contribution that Gerald Warren has made, not only for the people of the United States to understand the history better and not be taken in so much by the great democracy hypocrisy, but around the world to let people know what the real momentum and nature of this imperialist society is, and absorb it in the momentum of the worldwide revolution, which is taking place before our eyes, although very often trying our patience because it's taking so long and zigging and zagging so much. It hasn't been the kind of rapid, steady progress that many of us would like to see. But at least it sheds more light on the direction of things and about the role of the United States, which is held up as the beacon of human rights or something like that, when in fact it's very much the opposite.
Well, thank you so much for that, Joel. And we must remember history is very important. And there was a gentleman in the British Parliament named Lord Wilberforce who was talking about ending the slave trade. And there's so much of history, when you know it, it makes sense what is happening today. Another connection we can make is that I believe it was North or South Carolina, they had more slaves than people, and white people. And so the slave owners and all white people carried guns in order to protect themselves from the struggles of people to free themselves from slavery. Therefore, the history of guns in America. We must understand that guns were very important in that other aspect of free land that was killing the indigenous people. So guns are very much a part of America, and when they try to make pretend that it isn't, see, it can go where guns are here to stay. I say, our young brother, God, my government, please do away with guns.
Losing you.
No. Hello?
Hello?
Can
yes.
you hear us?
Okay. I can hear you.
Yes, yes.
Okay. Lynn, can you hear us? Lynn, can you hear us? Okay, so...
Yes, I can
hear
you.
I'll remind you that there was a European-American who had a shootout with the police and killed several people. And I think Ralph can bring you up to date to show you the contradiction between what happens when an African American is accused of something by the police and shot dead, and a European American male who had guns, automatic weapons, I believe.
And this happened today. A young man, and he was carrying an AK-47, and the police did not shoot him. He shot two policemen and got away. And anybody who says that it is about training or anything else, syndrome, understand that. Not about any part of our
You're
the
breaking
people.
Up, Ralph.
Yeah, you're
I
breaking
can't
up.
Hear you.
Okay.
Breaking up. Just all that.
Now, we are about out of time. And so, with that said, I'm going to ask Betty.
I just want to remind people that Saturday, Ralph, that I will be on a panel up at Mount Moriah Church to discuss the people who are locked up and forgotten about. So, not necessarily political, but prisoners nonetheless.
I wish I knew how it would feel. be free. I wish I could break all the chains holding me. I wish I could say all the things that I should say. Say them loud, say them clear for the whole round world to hear. I wish I could share all the love that's in my heart. Remove all the bars that keep us apart.